Though I had flown to the greatest heights in a powerful jetliner to see the actual curvature of the Earth, I did not understand that there was something more. Much more. Chapter 2. Out of control. I am bent over and racked with pain. All day long I walk around filled with grief. A raging fever burns within me, and my health is broken. I'm exhausted and completely crushed. My groans come from an anguished heart. Have you ever woken up in the morning having slept in a funny position that left your arm kind of numb and tingly? It feels as though you have been injected with Novocaine or some other agent. You can't do anything with your arm until the feeling returns, which usually happens rather quickly. It's weird when you tell your arm to do something and it doesn't listen to you. One morning I woke up and both arms and both legs felt numb and tingling. Previously, if I had woken up with an arm that had gone numb, I could shake it off and the feeling would return quickly. But something was seriously wrong on this particular morning a few years back. It was a strange feeling. I began to question myself. What had I done? How could my sleep position have resulted in this kind of numbness of all my extremities? A few hours later, I was feeling very ill and got sicker as the day went on. Like a typical guy, I thought this sensation would just go away. It did not. Maybe I had a bug of some kind. This was on a Sunday. When the sickness did not go away by Monday, I went to the doctor. He examined me and, I thought, confirmed my diagnosis, that I had the flu. I returned home to wait out the sickness, but it did not leave. I returned to the doctor a few days later and he assured me it was flu and that it would wear off. But it was becoming obvious that something was very wrong. I was in the grip of something more sinister. I was getting weaker by the day. On day 10 I returned again to the doctor. This time I collapsed in the parking lot of the doctor's office. Some kind person dragged me into the office. Lorraine, our nurse, insisted that this was not the flu and that I see a neurologist. I had gotten the doctor's full attention, and they finally brought in a neurologist for a deeper look. The neurologist ordered a lumbar puncture to extract some spinal fluid. The doctor returned with the results of the tests they ordered, and I could tell something was seriously wrong by the look on his face. He said, "At first when you presented clinically, we thought you had multiple sclerosis, which in itself is not good. But the tests revealed that you have a very rare disease, which is why it would have been difficult for your doctor to diagnose your illness. You have contracted Guillain-Barré. This disease was very rare. It was named after the two French doctors, Dr. Guillain and Dr. Barré, who first isolated the disease in Paris in the 40s. With this disease, your own autoimmune system attacks your body. It destroys the myelin sheath on the brain stem, a kind of insulation covering the bundle of nerves. The myelin sheath allows the proper functioning of nervous system. When the myelin is damaged, nerve impulses slow down and the nerve cell begins to wither. It is like a gang of electrical wires woven together that lose their insulation and begin to short one another out. Most can also result from damaged myelin sheaths. This was perhaps why the doctor originally believed I had missed the myelin sheath around my brain stem was tattered and torn. My nervous system was out of control. The prognosis for this rare disease was grim. If it is diagnosed within short period of days, the treatment is a plasmapheresis, a blood purification procedure and intravenous immunoglobulin. This removes the problem but may result in a period of paralysis. Recovery is possible, but with lingering effects. However, if the disease isn't identified within that narrow window, it may result in an ascending paralysis beginning with the legs and moving up the body to paralyze your lungs. The end of the disease may be death. As I said, grim. There is very little medical investigation put into Guillain-Barré because it is so rare a disease. Those who have it simply have to learn to live with it. But like everything and every other time in my life, I thought I could be in control. While the doctor was explaining the disease to me, he spoke words that brought me to a chilling hopelessness. "Jim, it's too late for you. You have missed that window of opportunity, and I am afraid that you are condemned to a lifetime of pain." But in my arrogance I thought, it can't be that bad. I'll fix it. At that moment, I should have fallen down on my knees and prayed to God for help. But like everything and every other time in my life, I thought I could be in control. In any event, the doctors tried plasmapheresis. This was done several times in an effort to ease or eradicate the virus from my body that was causing the disease. Despite their best attempts at treatment, I ended up with some measure of paralysis. My fingers started to curl, so they taped sticks to my fingers to keep them straight. I went from being someone who was once in control of a high-powered aircraft to someone who couldn't even wash my own face. I couldn't do anything without the help of a nurse or a nurse's aide or Lorraine, my wife. Finally, my life and body were out of my control. I could not throttle past this one. I had been in many scrapes before, with engines failing or even times when I dove my water-bombing aircraft straight into a forest fire. But there was no controlling this catastrophe. My life was to be in a downward spiral. I was humbled and helpless and, worse yet, dependent upon other people, which was an unfamiliar feeling for me. When I got out of the hospital and went home, I did my best to follow the doctor's orders. I was a mess, I really was. Even to get out of bed was a painful ordeal. I would have to roll out of bed on my hands and knees and crawl up the dresser and then have someone help me. Again, I felt as helpless as a toddler. It was awful. In order to manage the disease, I had physiotherapy with the doctors trying all kinds of neurological drugs. I even had private hyperbaric chamber treatments for healing and pain management. But nothing stopped the pain. My nervous system was like a bunch of electrical wires and circuits without the insulation, all short-circuiting at once. Every impulse from my brain to move my hands or feet or, in some cases, even blinking my eyes resulted in pain. I am not talking inconvenient pain or nuisance pain. I am talking soul-searching, gut-wrenching, screaming out in the middle of the night pain. In the very bad times I had to move into another bedroom for fear of keeping Lorraine awake. I kept a leather belt by my bed to bite down on when the pain was intense in order to keep from screaming in the middle of the night. I never knew pain like that existed. The torment was a constant hell on earth. I kept a leather belt by my bed to bite down on when the pain was intense in order to keep from screaming in the middle of the night. The paralysis and pain affected all of my life, even the way I walked. Along with Guillain-Barré comes foot dragging, so when I would walk my right foot dragged behind me. The pain would get worse, with occasional deceptive times when the pain would subside a bit only to return with a vengeance. I could tell when a relapse and pain were coming on, but I never prayed. I just bit down harder and muscled through the onset. I never prayed. This became a new reality of life for Lorraine and me. My speech was slurred. I couldn't swallow anything but liquids for a long time, but I forced myself to do the exercises to be able to get around a bit. Eventually, and with great help and effort, I was able to teach my body to walk again. I thought to myself, oh, these are the cards I've been dealt. I've had a good run up until now. Most pilots are pragmatic people because we deal with the reality of keeping an airplane in the sky. You learn to live with whatever the skies bring. You try, and if it fails, you crash, so be it. I was out of my mind with pain. The doctors ultimately prescribed powerful narcotics to deal with my constant, life-altering pain. This was a strange experience for me. Because of my love of flying, I never really drank alcohol or took drugs of any kind. The strongest thing I took was an aspirin. I would not do anything that might endanger the career that I loved. Nonetheless, they put me on narcotics. The drugs made the pain manageable so that I could live and function. They did not take away the pain, but they dulled it. With the medication, for the first time I had something that would allow me to drift off to sleep instead of lying awake in pain for several hours. But it seemed that the more of that stuff I took, the more I needed to maintain a level of manageability. Soon, I regret to say, I began to lie to Lorraine. She would ask whether I took my medication, but in fact I was sometimes taking three times as much to have some sort of ability to function. I was headed down a fatal path. In a short time, things would get deadly serious. I was headed down a fatal path. In a short time, things would get deadly serious. One afternoon I got a call from a surveying company regarding some landmarks they asked me to approve. Late that afternoon, I crawled into my pickup truck and drove up to the property. I came to the crest of the hill and, for a moment, was taken by the image of the golden setting sun. I parked the truck and I sat there for a few minutes, getting up the nerve to move my body and bracing for another wave of pain that would surely come. While I was bracing myself for the pain, I looked down and saw a full container of my pain medication in the console of the truck. I did not realize that over the months of taking these strong drugs I had built up a tolerance and a toxicity in my body. There was an irony to sitting in my truck watching the beautiful sunset while at the same time being tormented in pain. I was looking for peace. So, I reasoned, if I took a few more maybe they would stop the pain. I was growing weak and weary in the battle against the pain and paralysis of my disease. I was not trying to kill myself, I was trying to kill the unrelenting pain. I remember sitting in my truck and looking at the setting sun and swallowing several pills. I found out later, after my experience, that the bottle of opioids was almost empty. I had tried everything possible under the sun to get some sort of relief and I couldn't find it unless I took these narcotics. My mind was on not wanting to be a bother to anyone and maybe trying to find some kind of control over my pain. Again, I was my own last resort. My only hope was in myself and in the drugs. Suddenly, having ingested many pills, instead of relief I began to feel a different kind of sensation. The bottom of my feet began to burn, and the burning rose up my legs and then up my thighs, involving the entire lower part of my body. Something was terribly wrong. I had done something catastrophically bad. My body was shutting down. It was as though the cab of my truck was filling up with water and I was drowning, gasping for air. I was dying, I was alone. I am bent over and racked with pain. All day long I walk around filled with grief. A raging fever burns within me, and my health is broken. I'm exhausted and completely crushed. My groans come from an anguished heart. When we are in pain, it engulfs us. When we are in pain, we slide into self-preservation mode. The pain controls us, our families, and everyone's lives revolve around that pain. We live in desperation to stop it. It is as though we are in the dark, we see nothing but the ever-present pain. People in physical pain are in a desperate search for any means of relief. People caught in the pain of life lose vision and therefore are desperate for hope. The psalmist goes on to say, "You know what I long for, Lord, you hear my every sigh. My heart beats wildly, my strength fails, and I am going blind." When we are in pain we cannot see the future, we only see the sameness of the moment and feel trapped. It was as though the cab of my truck was filling up with water and I was drowning, gasping for air. I was dying, I was alone. But in the darkness of pain there is also silence, and it is in the silence that, if we can listen, we hear the voice of God. The darkness and hopelessness brings an end to our natural ability. Billy Graham once said, "When we come to the end of ourselves, we come to the beginning of God. For in the dark we try to see with natural eyes. We flail against the darkness and hopelessness. We feel as though we are alone in our pain, whether physical or the pain of life." Further reflection. There was a man in the Old Testament, a prophet of God mighty in deeds, defeating and dispatching false prophets in a power encounter on a hilltop. Though he had done mighty things for God, he succumbed to the lies of the enemy and ran away in fear until he came to a cave. The cave was a place of darkness where natural vision had to cease. Now there were earthquakes, winds, and fire. "Lord, is that you?" Elijah said in his raised, quivering voice. But no reply came forth. Then the earthquake was joined by a fire from heaven, like the fire Elijah himself had called down only days before. "Is that you, Lord?" Elijah's voice now raised to a shout. "Is that you?" "Nothing." He put his hands over his ears to shut out the deafening sounds. When the natural and supernatural disturbances were at their peak, when it seemed that it could not get any louder, a sound began to seep through the bluster. It was faint, but as definite as the sound of a single violin playing a high sustained note above the din of a full orchestra. The sound seemed to grow, not louder, but more prominent as it continued. Eventually it was transformed into a breathy whisper that seemed to distract all of Ilija's attention from the storm, so much so that it caused him to stand up, uncover his ears, and step into the mouth of the cave to hear it better. It was as if the storm of his inner turmoil was being engulfed, embraced, in softness. The sound, as it drowned out the storm, was like that sound he had heard 100 mothers utter to their crying babies. It was as though Ilija heard the sound of God's voice gently whispering, "Shhhhhh, Ilija. It will be okay. I am here, I am here. ...5. You are not alone. Consider your own journey through life and any areas that seem beyond your control. They may be in a relationship, physical illness, or finances. Perhaps you are in a cave of fear or despair. You have come to the end of your natural vision and ability to see your way through or manage your circumstances or pain, whether physical or emotional. You have come to the end of yourself. You may feel trapped as Jim was or as Ilija who came to a cave on the mountain of God. Yet in this place of darkness, the Lord wants to reveal himself to you afresh. Let's stop for a moment and take a deep breath. Quiet your heart and mind the best you can. Enter into the cave with Ilija. Are the mighty winds or earth quaking under your feet dislodging you from your securities of life, the things you have always counted on? Maybe these are your natural abilities or talents or material resources. Where do you feel trapped as Jim was? Read Psalm 38:6-8 again. Pause and consider any words or phrases that stand out to you. Are you racked with some kind of pain? Are you grieving over a loss or a relationship or perhaps your health? Have you come to the end of yourself? Take time in the presence of God to allow the tumult and confusion to settle down and listen for the sound of the gentle stilling. Shhhhh, you are not alone. Chapter 3. Poised between heaven and hell. For he rescued us from the domain of darkness, and transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved Son, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. As the sun was slowly setting on the day and my life, an impulse arose, an involuntarily dawning from deep within me. For the first time in my life, I tried to raise my arms to the setting sun. A force greater than myself was arising from a place I never acknowledged throughout my entire life. Some awakening spiritual instinct erupted into words, whether I said them out loud or not is unclear to me. These were the first three of six words that would carry me into the presence of God. But I raised my hand and I said, "God, forgive me." The last thing I remember is slumping over and hitting my head on the steering wheel. I don't know how long I was there bent over the steering wheel, but I leaned back and sat up straight again. The burning was gone. I could see. I felt really good. In fact, I felt terrific. I thought, "Wow, that medication really worked." Feeling rejuvenated, I got out of the truck and walked about 15 feet away. I felt as though some kind of heavy, wet garment had been taken off of me, leaving me light and alive. Feeling more alive than I had for a long time, I turned and looked back at the truck and saw that the truck door was closed, though I did not remember closing it. As I looked closer, it appeared that there was a body slumped over the steering wheel. The head was turned toward me, and I saw blood coming from the mouth. At that moment, I became angry at the thought that someone was in my truck. What or who was this? I was filled with anger and rage. Who would dare to get in my truck without my permission and have the nerve to fall asleep? In my rage, I started toward the truck to open the door and give this person a piece of my mind. My indignation was overwhelming. I raised my hand and I said, "God, forgive me." Have you ever had a dream where you tried to walk or run but it seemed as though your feet wouldn't or couldn't move? Instead of a step, I could only manage a few inches with great difficulty. The more I struggled to move, the more resistance I felt. As I looked down at my feet, it seemed as though I was looking through my shoes, and I could see the ground beneath them. I suppose I must have just thought it was the result of the medication I had taken. I tried to move forward again, and ever so slowly I inched closer to the truck. I can't begin to describe my fright and amazement because the truck door was closed and locked from the inside. I looked a little more closely and realized, it's me. I was somehow outside of my physical body. But I could see, I could feel, I had all my faculties but no pain of any kind. What was this? How could this be? Was I dreaming? As I stood looking on in astonishment, a million thoughts ran through my mind. No sooner had I begun to try to get my bearings than I had the sensation I was beginning to rise. Now, as a pilot, I am a good judge of altitude. In seconds, I was above and looking down on the bed of the truck. Then I was 1,500 feet up and then 2,000 feet and rising faster and faster. I could look down and see my feet, but when I looked up I saw the tunnel of light that I have learned many who have had near-death experiences have reported. A golden circle about 60 feet in diameter appeared, the center swung inward, revealing an entrance to an immense distance. As I looked up at it, it opened up, and I began to pick up speed and slipped right into the tunnel. It was like being a kid remembering the first time I went down a tunnel slide. I slipped over the edge and into the tunnel. But this was not on a schoolyard, this was a tunnel of light. As a pilot, I am also a good judge of airspeed, yet there was no kind of wind or buffeting like flying those old aircraft into the forest fires in my water bombing days. It felt as though I was going a minimum of 1,000 miles an hour, yet totally silent and, again, with no sensation of wind. My being was tilted backward at about a 45-degree angle, traveling feet first inside this tunnel of light. Inside the tunnel there was what I could only describe as a swirling cloud on the inside, but more solid than cloud. A golden circle about 60 feet in diameter appeared, the center swung inward, revealing an entrance to an immense distance. Again, I had full cognition, being fully aware of where I was and having my mind and senses. As I was rocketing along, I sensed a focused light at the end of the tunnel. There was an air of expectancy woven together with terror. Still, conscious of the overdose of medication I had taken, I thought to myself, "Now you have done it. What's at the end of the tunnel?" I was unaccustomed to being taken where I did not want to go. Here, in this unexpected journey toward the light that I was approaching at tremendous speed, I was once again out of control. This isn't like losing an engine over the ocean, this is the big deal. The real deal. I was not holding the yoke of an aircraft this time. The arrogance of control and command in my life was intoxicating. Many pilots are known for it. This was an entirely new sensation for me. A soft landing. Suddenly, my lightning travel through the tunnel began to decelerate and I knew something momentous was about to happen. As I drew closer to the end of the tunnel, the opening was getting wider, and I decelerated from blazing speed to a gentle, soft landing standing upright again. I was standing before the light at the end, or exit, of the tunnel. It was covered with a mist, but it was obviously a portal and I knew I had to step through. Before me was a verdant landscape brilliant with light. As anyone would do stepping into an unfamiliar place, I carefully put my foot out and looked down to see that I was standing on the most incredibly beautiful, perfectly manicured green grass anyone could ever imagine. Maybe that is what is meant when people say, the grass is always greener on the other side. To my amazement, when I put my foot on the grass, light rippled out from under my foot. Light was everywhere. Now the dismal atmosphere reverberated with the screeching sound of hell's gates that cut through me and filled me with a soul-shuddering terror. Right and left, heaven or the abyss. Upon taking my second step onto the grass, the tunnel vanished behind me. Before me, it appeared as though someone had drawn a line, a median line separating right and left. To the right, brilliant yet soft light filtered through a subtle mist. But to the left, the ground sloped downward and away sharply into a crevasse of deep blackness. The walls of this crevasse were of a black, glistening, coal-like texture. Now the dismal atmosphere reverberated with the screeching sound of hell's gates that cut through me and filled me with a soul-shuddering terror. As I looked to the left and down, the steep slope disappeared into a mass of roiling, boiling black clouds. It was like looking in a clothes dryer filled with clothes turning over and over again. It was dark and rolling rapidly up the slope as if coming to overtake me. From this roiling blackness came a sickness and awful smell, a stench of death, hopelessness, and of things long dead. The darkness boiled toward me faster and faster. This black, massive, shape-shifting cloud to my left was filled with a dark and clammy presence permeating a deep murkiness. The darkness held a damp chill devoid of life and warmth. It seemed to me as though I was standing on the cusp of the rotting mouth of hell and evil. Out of this darkness climbed a creature of gruesome description, and I knew it was coming for me. Its eyes focused on me and glowed like burning coals. It opened its hideous mouth and I was mesmerized by the horror of the saliva dripping from its fangs. It was hungry for my soul. As I looked to my right in desperation, the scenery couldn't have been more different. All of us at one time or another have gotten up early on a summer's morning to find a beautiful mist hanging over the trees and the fields. We pilots call it ground effect. Dewdrops cover the grass, and there is the promise of another beautiful day. While we may not clearly see the sun, we know that it's there illuminating and filling the shimmery morning mist. As I stood at the meridian between heaven and hell, I instinctively turned toward the right and into the light. Whispers from the darkness. As I turned toward the light, I could hear a murmuring of dark voices coming out of this dank fog. At first, the voices were muffled and unclear as though I was hearing words spoken in the next room through a thin wall. I couldn't make out what they were saying, but there were multiple unrecognizable voices, whispers from the darkness. I turned away and toward the right and the luminescent landscape as the sinister voices became more clear and insistent. The voices spoke with a hissing quality directly to me as though a serpent were speaking to me, inviting me into the pit. I began to perceive the voices saying, "Jim. Jim. 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 Quick, come this way. Over here, Jim. Come with us, come with us." I felt the sharp scraping of a claw or talon going down the back of my shoulder. Now I really began to tremble. I tried to turn away from the pit and toward the light. But the more I turned away from the pit and the voices, the louder and more insistent was their tone. Added to the dread invitation was a physical attack. I felt the sharp scraping of a claw or talon going down the back of my shoulder. All the other voices grew louder, the taunting invitation more desperate, "Jim, come with us. We're here for you. This is where you belong." The voices seemed to be filled with a strange, gleeful excitement, anticipating some dreadful event. The more I turned toward the light, the more the darkness tried to draw me into its foul stench. With the sharp claw in my back and the screeching of demonic voices around me, I felt as though evil would have me. When my soul's freedom was under assault, these words erupted from the same deep place as when I said, "God forgive me," in my pickup truck. I cried out, "God help me." 6 words filled with power. The instant I spoke these words, the light on my right side became brighter, the darkness immediately retreated to the crevasse about 100 feet back, and the voices stopped. The tone of my words was pleading, begging, and coming from a place of total powerlessness. There was nothing in me that could have evaded the appalling doom of that dark pit. I did belong there. My life had been all about me. Now I was beseeching God for help. Beseech is a word we don't use much anymore. It was a helpless and beggarly request. "God, help me." I was out of options. To my wonderment, and in the midst of my despair, God answered my desperate plea. Points of light. The instant I cried out to God, 3 points of light appeared from behind that bright mist on my right as though my cry had cued their arising, as though they were waiting and watching over me. They appeared like the arising of the morning star that appears shortly before dawn, which has been used as a point of reckoning for navigation from ancient times. At first, these points of light were distant and formless, rapidly moving toward me from 3 different positions and converging on me. There was one light at probably 40 degrees, another at about 180 degrees, and another one about 270 degrees. The faster they came toward me, the brighter they became. As the points of light approached my position, Their light intensified and flooded over and beyond me and struck the creature out of the darkness. As the glowing light struck the creature and the darkness, it shrieked and roared in pain.